Welcome to Park Science Podcast, a podcast of Park Science Magazine that highlights milestones and contributions to science made by parks and programs of the National Park Service. Find our podcast series as well as the full Park Science Magazine online at nps.gov/parkscience. This episode was first aired on June 22, 2022, as part of the Retired Park Science Celebrates podcast series.
Hey everyone, I'm your host Cass Bismeyer, and I'm here with my co-host Sarah Sparhawk. Hey Sarah.
Hey Cass. Okay, so today we have three NPS staff on our podcast who helped to build a really unique function for the National Park Service, the National Natural Landmarks Program. Heather, Lori, and Deb are going to share their contributions to science over their program's 60 years.
And Heather, can you describe the National Natural Landmark Program for our listeners today?
Yeah, so the National Natural Landmarks Program is a partnership program, and it really helps to advance the National Park Service mission to extend the benefits of resource conservation to communities throughout the country. And it does this through designation by the Secretary of the Interior of sites that contain outstanding examples of biological and geological features. And so with that designation, it creates a partnership between the Park Service and the many different public and private landowners at these NNL sites. And so it provides a really great way for the NPS to be able to engage with and to support site owners in their conservation efforts.
And you mentioned sites, Heather. Are there a lot of sites? Are there sites in every state? Can you tell us a little bit just about that, you know, approach to NNLs and where they are?
Yeah, so there are currently 602 sites all across the country, and they're both in urban areas as well as more rural settings. Some of them are a little bit more well-known, and some of them are not terribly well known and are kind of off the beaten path. There are sites in all states except for Delaware and Louisiana.
And one last point of clarification here. So you mentioned that it's a partnership. Does the National Park Service actually own any of these sites, any of the land, or is it purely owned by private individuals?
So the Park Service, there are very few NNL sites that occur within units of the National Park System. There are about 25 of these designated areas that are within units of the National Park System. All of the rest of them are on lands of other ownership. So the bulk of these sites are on lands owned by states or counties, other federal agencies, tribes, municipal agencies, and even private landowners. So we see NNLs occurring really within and on lands of all types of ownership.
So Heather, what are we celebrating today? Can you tell us a little bit about this program's milestone?
So we are celebrating the 60th anniversary of the NNL program. It was established on May 18th in 1962 by Secretary of the Interior Stuart Udall. And really, this milestone is a celebration of six decades of partnership. Provides a really great opportunity to bring awareness to the program and to the network of sites. It's also a really great opportunity to honor the efforts of these various, you know, public and private landowners who have been responsible for stewarding these sites over these years.
Deb, what does this diamond milestone mean to your regional office?
It's kind of reiterating what we've really focused on this year and have been excited about with the anniversary is just shining a light on the work that our landmark owners have done. You know, obviously it's not been the same owners for the past 60 years in all cases or managers, but that cumulative effort by all of those various from private up to other federal agency landowners that have contributed to this program and preserving these sites that carry the designation.
Six decades. Surely there's got to be some amazing contributions to science in that time. Let's hear about some of them. Heather?
Some of the ways that the program has contributed to science is through the fact that one of the criterion for becoming a national natural landmark is one of the significance criteria is for the value of the site to science and education. And so that is considered as part of that sort of the early evaluation of these areas. So many of these sites kind of provide this representation of areas that have significance or value, you know, to science. And so there are sites that are recognized because they were part of some of the very early science of paleontology or, you know, understanding our world from long ago. And others are like long-term research sites.
Any endemic species or specific species that have newly been identified in any of the NNL sites?
We actually do have on Muskeget Island in Massachusetts, there is an endemic vole. They also have a massive gray seal breeding population, and that's another big research topic out there. And that's a site that has contributed greatly to both gray seal recovery and research into gray seal population dynamics. But that is one that comes to mind that they have. And there's been some study of the vole, but certainly not as much as the gray seal. So that's definitely something that could use more research. That's a future topic.
Very cool. We'll put that on our list to go check out. How cool is that? I kind of want to turn to looking ahead and talk a little bit about what your program at this milestone, what you're enthusiastic about right now. Like what's happening right now that each of you could be excited about? And Lori, let's start with you.
Yeah, thanks, Cass. I am particularly excited about my relationship with the Ice Age Flood National Geologic Trail. It celebrates the Missoula Ice Age floods, partnering very closely with the new project manager. We have 8 NNLs along the trail that we're celebrating and, you know, working together to feature those sites in his material as well as our NNL material. And just recently, that group has asked me to be on their technical committee. So I am very excited about that. And just bringing the awareness, the NNL awareness to that group has been fantastic.
That's awesome. That's definitely a trail I want to check out too. Deb, how about you? What are you most enthusiastic about right now?
Well, my answer is probably a little bit more selfish. I'm kind of excited about after the lack of travel the past few years, getting back out to the landmark sites and reconnecting with all of the owners and managers and learning about, you know, what has been going on at the landmarks and in their worlds as far as conservation and probably some new science that they're doing that we don't currently know about.
And Heather?
I think one of the things that I'm excited about are some of the program materials that we have been recently putting together. And really we've been doing this not only to share with the public, but really with a focus of providing these to site owners and managers with the idea that this is going to help equip them to tell the story. So the way, you know, the more that we can make this information readily available and easily digestible, they can then take that and use their voice to share with others about the designation and the resources, the significant resources at their site, and really help to kind of impart the importance of these areas.
Yeah, and we'll put that in the listener notes so folks can access that too, as well as, of course, the National Natural Landmarks website link too. This is great. I mean, it's making me excited. I'm enthusiastic about the program, excited about the milestone anniversary here.
Yes, thanks, Cass. I would love to hear about how are you tackling some of the oncoming issues in science as it relates to the NNLs?
Thanks, Sarah. You know, I'm just going to say just internally, we have been really working as the Natural Resource Stewardship and Science Division as an example. To build those relationships and kind of collaborate with those programs so that we can better serve the landmark owners. For example, we have just worked the National Trails and Wild and Scenic Rivers program. We now know all the trails and rivers within our NNLs, and minimally, it is exciting to share that information, that kind of crosswalk with site managers. There's more to come on that front, but these relationships are beneficial, I think, to everyone.
Well, I think as far as, our role in the program is more when you talk about oncoming science issues, is to highlight what the NNL owners and managers are doing to rise to those challenges and, do the research and science that's necessary to answer those questions and come up with a way to tackle those issues. You know, it's really we ourselves may not be directly involved in the science. We sometimes can broker assistance from Park Service scientists to help out at NNLs, but generally it's the site owners and managers that are doing the science. And so I can easily name off a handful of sites that are actually owned by academic institutions. There really is a lot of research and science, and some of it cutting edge, dealing with climate change and, you know, monitoring changes in forest ecology. I know that's a big topic right now, forest resiliency. So all of this stuff is going on at NNLs. We're not directly involved, but we really strive to kind of elevate what they're doing at these sites.
I want to switch gears a little bit. I think one of the things that, especially with a longstanding program like this, you guys are probably constantly in some sort of planning mode. I want us to look ahead to the 70th anniversary, the 75th anniversary. Give us a sneak peek. What's on the horizon as far as NNL's future potential contributions to science, potential new sites that you may be thinking about? Give us that little sneak peek, Heather.
Now, some of the things that I think that we've been working on, I think, to set us up, we are really investigating and looking at where overlap exists. So we're working to understand how and where do NNLs overlap with other areas of designation, so national heritage areas or national trails. And so having even just that general understanding of this layering, you will, of different recognitions, the better that we can help build those bridges and make those connections, which aid in when sites are looking to do projects. I mean, it provides that sort of network for broadening the scope, potentially bringing in partners and having it be a broader landscape collaborative project. So even that basic understanding is really exciting and kind of positions us in the years ahead for that. We're also looking at it from a resource perspective. So understanding across the landscape, where's the commonality in resources among sites? Again, that just helps with better making those connections to enable sort of a broadening of scope and partnering for projects. And
thanks so much, Heather. One last question here, and then we're going to open it up for anything that we might have missed for our listeners. But if you could partner with anyone or any organization to advance your work in science, who would it be? And let's just start with Lori, and then we'll head to Heather and then Deb.
I would like to partner with the National Park Foundation, both to raise our profile within the National Park Service, but an opportunity to help our sites with a little bit of funding. I mean, we have this great honorific designation. We bring to them a nationally significant natural resource, but it would so often be nice to actually help them out, whether it's helping with an exhibit, a brochure, a trails work. We are working with NRSS to start to use their science arm so we can, you know, offer stream restoration and some of those in-kind services. But sometimes all sites need, you know, is a few grand. And that would be great to have the foundation recognize us as an extension of the National Park Service and park units.
I like that idea, Lori. Yeah, that sounds great. Heather, who would it be for you? Who would you partner with if you could?
And I think that the National Geographic comes to mind, I think, just from the perspective of helping share science stories and providing even that broader audience that is already tied into the National Geographic.
Deb, let's head to you. You've been with NNLs for quite some time. Who would you partner with if you could?
It's a large question with a very open field, but I'm going more narrow, and I'm thinking within the Park Service, and the I&M program, the inventory and monitoring program. I think that's always been on my mind for some years, as far as where there might be opportunities for some crossover, since I know that there are a lot of NNLs all throughout these I&M networks that are dealing with this, a lot of the same issues that the parks are. And so there just seems like there would be a good fit there for some form of collaboration.
I say let's do all three. Each of those partners sound great. I'm surprised we're not working with some of them to help advance your work. And in some ways, surprised that your work has gotten to 60 years without some of those tools and important contributions from partners like that. So bravo to you all. Hopefully, we might have planted a little seed there for some partnership in the future. We just want to close out with anything that we might have missed for our listeners today. Anything that you'd like to comment on, something that you'd like to elevate and just help our listeners understand the National Natural Landmark Program a little bit better, or how they can get involved. Lori, let's start with you and then we'll head to Deb.
I think it's just sharing the fact with land managers and owners that they are indeed managing, overseeing a nationally significant natural resource, and make them excited about that. And they usually are. When you say it that way, they suddenly, get a little taller. That is both really, really cool and really terrifying. So as an agency, right, are we doing enough to shore up these nationally significant resources? The age-old question.
Just that, these landmarks are everywhere, all across the country. So people can get involved by visit our website. I'm sure you will find a landmark near you that is open to the public, or that you can get permission to go visit. And you can get involved. A lot of these sites are owned by organizations that are looking for volunteers and monitors to check in on these sites periodically. So there's lots of opportunities to get involved, for sure.
Yeah, I would just add on to what Lori and Deb have said. Again, with this designation, the Park Service doesn't have management authority, and really the reason that conservation happens at these sites is because of that voluntary commitment and the stewardship of the various owners. And so in addition to, checking them out, see what's nearby, give them a thanks. I mean, we are certainly shouting out to all of our partners and NNL owners and managers for their efforts over the years, because these are really spectacular sites that illustrate the real diversity of natural features in our country. And so a shout out to them and their efforts to steward them over these years.
Well, this has been really awesome to talk to the three of you today. You have so much knowledge about the program. And I think we've given our listeners a lot to think about, and lots of different ways to celebrate the program throughout the rest of this year. So thank you so much for joining Cass and I today.
Yes, and congratulations on your 60th anniversary. What a milestone.
This has been Park Science Podcast. Catch up on more podcasts and articles at nps.gov/parkscience.